Hello, everybody. Welcome back. It's the Philosopher's Stone podcast. Bam.
Boom.
Episode 4,000. 40K. Episode 40,000.
Philosopher's Stone 40K.
40K. There's nothing but grim darkness in our podcast future. How's everybody doing?
Will be joining us later.
Oh, what a get.
Yeah. I got him.
A get.
I got him.
How did you manage that?
Well, I was playing with my little action figures in the park, and who should walk by but Henry Cavill.
And he started bullying you?
No, he had his action figures too, actually.
Oh.
And we both played a little bit.
In the dirt?
Sandbox.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah, arranged the interview for later.
Well, there you go.
Hopefully he still shows up.
Well, I really think that would do wonders for our numbers. Here we go. Hang on. Let me check the old...
Yeah, he has a lot of followers. He's popular.
Ah, damn it. No emails. Bonnie.
I saw got an email? All right.
No, I saw one of our only listeners, and we agreed that she would send in an email. So I was so excited. Bonnie, you're dangerously close to being kicked out of the exclusive fan
base. No. It's okay. It's not a big deal. It's not a big deal.
I'm just kidding. We can't. We need at least one listener out there, you know. And I know for sure she's our listener. So we love you, Bonnie. Even though you failed, the email test that I set upon you. But we'll be looking forward to the next one, because immediately after hearing this episode, you're going to be like, I better get that email going, and then you're going to have a very nice email crafted, not by AI, coming from your own thoughts, feelings. But we love you, Bonnie. So I don't know. What else were we talking about? What's going on? What's going on with your life, Sam?
Well, I got a haircut recently.
Yep.
So that's good. And then, I always get caught off guard with these questions about like what's going on, and I can't think of anything. And then later I remember like, oh yeah, well, there's all that stuff.
I got a haircut. And then later you wake up in the middle of the night. Oh yeah. I killed someone.
Yeah. Yeah. So right now going off the dome, it's hard to think of anything.
Okay.
Interesting.
Sam is officially on a hiatus from comedy, which we've all been sad about. Everybody in the community has been sad about it, except for him. He doesn't seem sad about it at all.
No, I don't. Miss it that much for some reason.
That much. So you're saying there is a percentage of you that misses it.
Yeah, like if I think of something funny that I could have used on stage, then I would think, ah, oh well, can't use it, but still funny.
What a waste, hey? That thought will never materialize. It will remain in the ocean of the ether, floating around, unused for no one. Look, that thought will never, well, probably will be at some point by a different comedian on some version of it. There's no such thing as originality, but still, your version of that premise delivered in your way and your mind's filter on it will never be exposed to the universe.
That's true. It's what do you call it? A book that will never be read. Yeah. The joke that will never be told.
Wow.
Yeah. It's sad.
And you're okay with that.
I am okay with it. I'm okay with it.
Interesting.
Yeah. I don't know. I have to be, I have to have commitment to, I can only be committed to a certain number of things in my life before I start to feel like I have too much going on.
Oh, I hear that. My comedy schedule has gotten chopped down to like 30% of what it used to be. Cause I started a family, but however, on that note, I will be in Victoria this weekend, the weekend of March 13th, 14th, 15th performing. I will be at the Mint doing a guest spot or just a little drop-in spot at the OK Dope Show. If this comes out before then, right? You can put it out tomorrow, right?
It'll probably be up this evening.
Okay. I'm going to do the OK Show, OK Dope Show. I'm not the headline. I'm just going to maybe pop in, do a quick set, but it's a good show. Well-produced show.
Popping Thursday? Into a good show is almost better than headlining it.
Oh, because
then the audience
into any
like,
show is better than headlining.
Yeah.
But on the Thursday, I will be in Nanaimo. Hang on a second. I'm just going to figure out exactly where I am on the off chance. We have a listener in Nanaimo.
Nanaimo bars. The famous bars. Friend, the land of bars. Where they make the bars.
My friend so Ty Boissonneau.
The factory? Or the bakery or whatever.
No, called. I'm just popping out there for the evening. Ty Boissonneau is will going to be...
at least eat a Nanaimo bar.
Sorry. No, gross.
Oh my God.
At the Green Olive. March 13th, 8 p.m. So my friends are, I have a few friends on this show. That's going to be fun. Come up to that. And then on the Saturday, the 15th, I will be doing the feature spot at Heckler's. So come out to that if we have any listeners in Victoria or Nanaimo.
The Green Olive and Heckler's.
And the Mint, I think.
And the Mint.
Yeah.
The cool Mint.
Yes. Mint Breeze. I've heard that place is good. I've heard Heckler's is good. I haven't done comedy in Victoria since the day Kobe Bryant died.
Wow, you'll never forget that day.
No. Think about it all the time. Actually, technically,
how was the show that day? How was the mood?
Sorry, I did the show the night before. To be perfectly honest, it was when we were the exact moment I heard that he had passed was when we were getting loaded up onto the ferry.
Oh, after the show.
The next day, yeah.
The next day. Well, yep.
That's the last time I was in Victoria. You know, for someone where, you know what it is about comedy is I love everything about it, except for it requires, like, if you really want to make any progress in the industry, you have to travel like nonstop. And I just, I don't know if I have it in me. I'm an old man. So I have not traveled very far outside of my region as a comedian. It's actually kind of shameful.
Well, I think you should lean into the fact that it's a industry that demands real flesh and blood people to show up.
Yeah.
And do stuff.
Yeah. It is the thing is when you first start as a comedian, I guess in Canada at least, is that you have to travel a lot and you make no money when you travel. So you're basically you have to travel around and show with the people your wares, what you can do. And then the next time, if you're lucky, you'll make money going through, but it's a long time to do that. And I don't know. Anyways, what was
it's like the old Silk Road Traders. Yeah.
Yes.
This reminds me of that. Yeah.
But like Canadian headliners spend so much time on the road. It's not something
big country.
Big country, and it's like infinite spans of highway in between each spot, in between each paid gig. So it's like, holy shit. Anyways, I don't know if I'm built for that amount of travel, and I don't even think I can. You know, it's a hard game to become a touring headliner in Canada. And I hats off to anyone that does it, because that's a lot of travel and a lot of nights spent alone on the road.
Yeah, that's a tough gig. Yeah, tough gig.
And it would be hard to justify if you have a family and the money isn't like fantastic. So yeah, that's where I'm at with that. Not that I'm a headliner, but I do headline. So if you see me in your area and I'm headlining, come see me because I will do it.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, I mean, yeah, I guess, yeah, the only way around it would be to get so good that you can go somewhere like Vancouver or Vegas and then you just do a residency. But I don't know. That's like what you do when you're retired practically. Almost.
Well, the best thing that could happen to you as a comedian, I think, like the top comics, this is mostly for American comedians, I would suppose, is that you get flown to whatever city for the weekend you're performing at, then flown home. So you're gone every weekend, but it's just a quick flight to each city.
Yeah.
And then you come in. It's a lot of time in airports and shit, but that to me is just part of the job. I don't mind airports.
That's how you know comedians are on the downward slopes of their careers is when they start making lots of airport jokes and airplane jokes.
Well,
and then you know it's over.
That's what depends is like sometimes you know it's over when they only talk about stuff that super wealthy people can relate to.
Yeah.
And that is like sort of like kind of like travel a lot. If all your jokes are about like If you're name dropping celebrities a lot while you're doing comedy, I think you've fucking lost the plot. But also, yeah, it's like if your life is travel, then you're, of course, your new joke ideas are going to be all about travel, or it's going to be about shit you saw on the internet. But there's no, if you're not out there actually trying new shit, you're not going to get a lot of, like, you know, actual material from your own life. It's going to be a lot of, this is what I saw on the news today, or traveling's weird.
Yeah, I've seen that as like a potential trap that you can fall into. Or it seems like a lot of artists who fall into that trap is that when they get success, they stop living life and like gathering the experiences and the emotions and the connections that they need to fuel their art. And all that they're surrounded with is business and wealth.
Exactly. And it's also like there is like, as much as you love an art form, when you are so wealthy, the motivation to really put in the effort is a little bit less. I would have to.
Wow. Imagine. Yeah. The waking up, what was the boxer's quote? I was like, it's hard to fight when you're waking up in silk sheets.
Yeah. Exactly. If you're not hungry, then you're not going to go the extra mile. Right. But also what happens with the comedians a lot, especially, is they end up getting an audience that is so on board with them that they really don't have a lot of the data you need to like hone a really good joke, right? If they're always laughing at everything you say, you're just going to be like, all right, I guess that joke's done, because it every part of it works every time. But if that person went and did that material in front of an audience that didn't know them, it might not work as well. It's like what happened with Steve Martin, where he's like, every single thing I do up here gets a huge laugh. So it's like, it's hard to even figure out what the craft is anymore.
Yeah. True. He had to quit because, or I think that was one of the reasons why he said he stopped doing it, was because it just wasn't fun for him anymore.
Well, if there's no stakes when everything you say is going to get a huge laugh because, oh my God, it's Steve Martin, we love him. Right. If you're really like putting care into a specific joke or story and it works, like it absolutely destroys every from the first time you tell it, you have to know deep down that this isn't as good as the audience is telling you it is. And that's why you see a lot of comedians fall off once they make it big, because they don't have that feedback you need from, you know, people that don't know you, to find like the weak points in your bits, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, from my perspective, if Steve Martin is allowed to retire from comedy, then I should certainly be allowed to retire from comedy.
I've never thought of that way. Yeah, you're right. You're basically clone of Steve Martin. I've heard that a lot.
I meant it in the opposite way. I meant like, if someone that good can retire, then surely someone so amateur should also be allowed to retire.
It's hard to argue with that logic,
right? You see, there's some boxers who their record is horrific. Like they have more wins, they have more losses than wins, and that kind of thing. But they just keep plugging away, taking the L's.
The thing with combat sports is like the love of the game. You end up having to weigh it with a toll on your body.
Yeah. It's not. Yeah, in my opinion, not worth it. I don't have the strong enough body. It would get broken.
To fight for a living?
Yeah, I'm a fragile flower.
Yeah, me too. So I
physically and mentally weak.
I've thought about joining. I've been talking about joining a boxing gym for so long, but I'm like, I really think, first of all, it's probably expensive, right? To get lessons.
Well, boxing is, it depends where you go. If you go to like a tough gym, it's probably not that expensive.
Right.
But if you go to like a nicer, cleaner gym, it's going to be a little bit more expensive. I think ultimately it's not going to cost a lot of money if it's just boxing. I think you'll probably spend more money if you're trying to do like MMA training, where you've got to have a BJJ coach and a wrestling coach and a striking coach. And like,
right. Yeah, I mean, I got to do something to incorporate more exercise in my life. That's for sure. I've been saying that for years. It's just that one thing that's like really hard for me to get into.
But, well, it's It's discipline, Jordan. That's why it's hard. Because
I lack discipline. I really do. It's one of my main problems in life is I am not disciplined. If I'm not like really enjoying something, then I don't. It takes me a while to get build up routines. Like I don't have to be told to go do stuff I like, obviously, so I can get good at stuff I like pretty easily. But when it comes to stuff like exercise, I know there is that threshold you hit where you start enjoying it. And I've hit it before, and then it's so easy to get thrown off that routine.
The doing regular workouts,
or even just going for runs. Like the first few times I go for a run, I hate it, but then after a few weeks of running regularly, I start to look forward to it. That type of thing. But then if I go a week without running, then I hate it again.
Yeah, I think you do have to. Well, you have to really want to do it in the first place. Like you have to, at least in my opinion, to really stick to a disciplined workout routine, you have to hate yourself and love yourself.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I've got the hate part down.
The hate part is there. Yeah.
The hate part I have got down pat. I just need to get that love part. Or maybe it's the other. Maybe I don't hate myself enough. Maybe I need to hate myself a little bit more.
Yeah, I think so. Hate yourself, and then, but you also need to see results, because if you don't see results, then you think, well, what is the point of doing this?
Right. So, well, for me, when I was running, you know, semi-regularly, a few times a week, the results as far as feeling better happened pretty quickly, like within 2 weeks. I would feel, I had more energy. Like you can just sense like when your heart's actually pumping blood to the ends of your veins, you know, instead of only halfway, you notice that. So, and I was doing good, but the spring is upon us. Maybe it's time to give it another shot.
Like, yeah, I would say just start out with something little every day, just a little thing.
Or my other idea was, since I already love drumming and I play drums as often as I physically can, what if I did like some like sort of ancient samurai anime style weighted wrists and feet and play drums with wrist weights, and then maybe that would count.
I think, you know what I mean? That would be a great way to get carpal tunnel really fast.
Yeah, I'm struggling with that. It would probably mess up all my technique too. I don't think that's a good idea, actually. I have heard people say that they do that. Because weighted sticks, if I play with heavy sticks and then I switch to light sticks, I feel like I gain like so much skill just from that switch, because everything's so easy.
I would say that you should keep it simple, but like if you want to like see, I think the best way to get quick results is, unfortunately, you're not going to like it, but it is to do some sort of intense workout that gets your heart rate up and gets you sweating, and it doesn't have to be running. It can be, you can do that with dumbbells, and you can do that with body weight without running.
Yeah, I know.
That is the way to go.
The part
you don't have to do it for a long time, just maybe 20 minutes. If you get the heart rate up and you get sweating, then you'll see results.
I need to pick. Oh, I saw like a self-contained workout unit at Costco. I almost impulse bought it.
Don't do that. Don't. A self-contained workout. Huh?
Well, it's got like, it's like a gym machine that has like several different machines combined into one type of deal. And it was pretty compact. That's what it would fit like somewhere in my basement. And if I just like force myself to go down there every day and do it, I just gotta. And the other thing that will throw me off a workout routine is if I spend like a weekend partying, I am like completely off my, then it takes me so long to get back into any sort of healthy lifestyle. So that's another thing I got to keep in mind.
And think about this, Jordan.
Yeah.
Think about this.
Yeah,
we are hurtling towards war with the United States. Hurtling.
I don't think
so. And we're going to need every able-bodied young man to take the field.
Oh, okay.
And surrender collectively.
Well, when you put it that way, I would love to rush into my death at top speed.
Yeah.
There's little holding me back. Definitely don't want cardio to hold me back from dying young. I don't think we're going to war with the states. I don't. No one wants that. No.
How's this for like a trap, right? We talked about the artist falling into the trap of forgetting what got them there in the first place. What about our nice little democracy that we have in Canada, or the other nice little democracies around the world? Are we too nice in these democracies, and now we're going to get eaten up by the brutal, dictatorial fascist states?
No, because I don't think that people really want, like, the thing about Trump and his followers, really what they want is economic relief, right? That's their main thing for the most part, right? They're not expansionists. Like, the most of Trump, people that voted for Trump did not vote for him on this "I'm expanding the empire" shit he's been on since he got elected. So I really don't think he has the support for any sort of invasion or anything like that.
Like a military invasion, maybe.
Yeah, not.
I wouldn't be surprised at all if something like that happened.
I mean, I would be, you wouldn't be surprised at all?
Not after he's said that he wants to annex the country. At this point, I wouldn't be surprised if he did anything crazy, like ordered troops to cross the border or something like that.
I don't think that realistically, what would happen? Do you think they would just come across the border and start shooting?
No. I don't think they would kill anybody. But like, I wouldn't be surprised if they just did bullying tactics like that, like just drove a tank and parked it or something.
Well, at the border? Or just like
across the border.
Oh, somewhere. Like, okay. At most they could come occupy us for a bit, but they're never gonna, without the agreement of everyone living here and a huge portion of the Americans. Also, it doesn't make any sense because most Canadians would probably vote Democrat. So I don't understand what his point is here.
Yeah.
He just thinks we have that many natural resources, it's worth taking us at all costs. I think he really just wants to be able to put that on his legacy, you know, put that on his name that he expanded all the way and took Canada. That's what he really wants, is he wants to be able to say, this was America before Trump, this is it after. Look at how big it is. Big.
Yeah. I just watched the movie The Apprentice with Sebastian Stan as Donald Trump. And Jeremy Strong is Ray Cohn. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, probably the best portrayal of Trump I've seen.
Really? I've never seen any portrayals of Trump outside of the context of like a comedy sketch.
No, you should watch this movie. This is an incredible movie. It didn't get a lot of love from the Academy because Trump rapes his first wife, Ivana, in the film. Which happened in real life as well, but people don't want to talk about it.
Right.
And he's also a convicted rapist. But anyway, great film. Yeah. Great film. But it shows it showed what I think is like the truth of him, which is what everybody knows, which is that he's just total narcissist. Number one, total narcissist. Number two, zero morals. No, mm-hmm. No morality at all. No honor, no loyalty, nothing. And then number three, he likes power at all costs.
Yeah, and he likes winning at all costs. Like he won't accept it. And if he wins, he will say it's all because of everything he did, and no one else could have done it as good as him. This is someone who's never admitted they've been wrong ever.
Right. But, and then the kicker is, to those three things, he's not smart.
All he knows is that if he repeats things over and over again and tells people what they want to hear, they're going to put faith that he'll do that. Like, the whole reason he got elected was he found out what his base wanted. He found out what the conservative Americans want. promised them the moon and everything that they promised them the moon and everything. He never had a solid plan as to how he was going to do it. He just promised and promised and promised until people couldn't ignore it. And they're like, all right, well, he seems pretty sure he's going to be able to do this. But in reality, as we're all seeing unfold right now, he has concepts of plans that don't work at best. And is surrounded by sycophants. So it's like, there's no one really there in his corner to be like, hey, this is fucking not going to work. And anyone that says against that is a, you know, a libtard.
Yeah. I mean, this is the same thing as it's what everyone has been saying, but yeah, it's really his first administration just like turned up the volume from the first administration on this one.
He did get the he basically did get a mandate from the American people to
barely got a mandate.
Okay, but
he won the popular vote by not very much at all.
What do you think the average Trump voter's true number one priority was and why they were really wanted to vote for him? I have to imagine it was mostly for economic relief. I don't think people really voted for him to, you know, get trans people out of women's sports or whatever.
I think about 30 to 36% of his supporters voted for him for all of his crazy shit. They love all of his mad shit. 36% at least of his supporters. And then I would say the other 14%, entire voting population. So like, I think 36% of the voting population are batshit MAGA Trump supporters.
You think it's that high?
Yeah.
You think 36% of the American voting people would slap on a MAGA hat? No problem.
I think 30 to 36% would stick with him almost no matter what.
What? That seems a little bit high to me.
It's a cult.
This is a cult.
I mean, how did he even win a second election after the first 4 years of absolute insanity and January 6th and all that? He won again because, sorry to say, about 36% of Americans are idiots.
Yeah.
That's just the reality. And it might be on both ends. There might be 36% MAGA idiots and then 36% super far left idiots.
That doesn't leave a lot left for not idiots.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's America. They elected Trump twice. These people are not. They're not the best. These are not the best people.
These are not sending their best to the voting booth. My hope is that this administration will be even hard. It'll be such a disaster for like, this is like, I hope you can't, it's hard to hope for a disastrous administration, but like, it's almost like these people need to see what they voted for, what it really is. And it's chaos. They voted for chaos, economic chaos, chaos. This guy wants Greenland. He wants Canada. He wants the Panama Canal. He's completely fucked his alliance with the Europeans. He's like completely brown-nosed Putin. It's insane. But anyways, I'm going to try and steer this conversation away from that man because I feel like we've spent a disproportionate amount of time talking about him. But it's kind of hard to ignore when he's threatening to basically invade your country. So I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, hey, Jesus, take the wheel. Where are you taking us?
Straight to hell, I guess. Highway to hell. Jesus got the wheel.
Okay. Well, okay. Unfortunately, this will keep the topic a little bit, but I saw another great movie recently. Mickey 17, film from Bong Joon-ho.
Been on
a bit of a bong rip recently.
Bong rip, eh?
Watched Parasite as well.
Nice.
Yeah, it was very good. Very good film. With Robert Pattinson playing multiple versions of himself. It's great. It's like, I feel like the marketing didn't really do it very good justice, but basically it's like there's a colony ship leaving Earth run by a failed politician. Sorry, Jordan, but he's a Trump parody played by Mark Ruffalo.
Oh, God.
who's incredible as this like Trump parody. It's amazing. But So there's this colony ship leaving Earth. Robert Pattinson's character is on the run from loan sharks and signs up to get on this ship by any means necessary, even if it means signing up as a quote unquote expendable. So he volunteers to be an expendable without really knowing what it is. And then it turns out that it means that he basically, his memories and his mind get uploaded into a computer, and then the ship's organic waste, so people's leftover food, their shit, all this stuff, goes through a big machine and prints out a new version of him.
They're 3D printing him out of shit?
Yeah, he's 3D printed out of bio waste, basically.
Wow.
Yeah. And then the movie is about them, this colony ship sort of landing on their new planet to colonize it. But turns out there's aliens there, and the shenanigans ensue.
Shenanigans ensue.
Much like they do in Parasite.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I got to rewatch Parasite. I did remember liking it, but I forget the whole story. And what was the other one he did?
He's done a bunch of films, Bong Joon-ho, Parasite. His most famous, I think, are Parasite and Snowpiercer.
So he did Snowpiercer?
Yeah, he did Snowpiercer, Okja, The Host. Bong Joon-ho is a very accomplished director.
I like Snowpiercer.
Parasite's by far his biggest hit. Everything else he's done is like a cult film, but...
I know Snowpiercer has a bit... Well, Snowpiercer got made into a TV show, too. I don't think he was involved, but...
Yeah. Yeah.
No, premise is one of those premises where this is either going to be terrible or it's going to be awesome. And I remember thinking it was awesome.
Yeah. Well, his work, class is a big thing in his work, in Bong Joon-ho's work. Like Parasite, right? So you've got this super rich family, ultra wealthy family, and then you've got this very poor family. And the poor family sort of cunningly insinuates themselves into the lives of the rich family to work for them as their tutor, their housekeeper, their driver, et cetera.
Right.
And then it turns out, spoilers for Parasite, but it turns out that, and so as they get these jobs, they force out the old housekeeper who used to work there.
Mm-hmm.
Like they get rid of her, they get rid of the driver, they force out these other people of their same class.
Mm-hmm.
They force out the people who are their same economic status out of these jobs so that they can move in and take them. And it culminates in a brutal,
I've lost you, Sam. Oh no.
Violence between,
Sam has the poor gone people fighting against each other. Line. I am going to speak and my mind.
I think
about
all the rich people escape unharmed.
Well, he can't.
Or no, their daughter.
Sam Laboon.
I can't remember.
Sam,
can't remember
back?
Who does.
Sorry. What? I lost you there for a second.
Oh no.
Continue.
Where did I leave off?
They were forcing out people of the same class.
Right. So the poor family, they force out the rich family's driver. They force out the housekeeper and they move in and take those roles. And then they find out later on that there's the housekeeper's husband has been living under the house for years secretly.
Right.
Out of loyalty to the house's previous owner, a famous architect.
So and wait, then, he was living there out of loyalty to the previous owner?
Yeah.
Okay.
And well, just to like anyone who owns the house, really.
Right.
Out of respect.
Wait, I'm not understanding something. The previous housekeeper who they got pushed out, her husband was living under the house. Out of respect for the owners?
Yeah. Precisely to do one thing, which is when the owner gets home, he walks up some stairs and then this guy in the basement presses three buttons with his head to make it look like the lights are motion activated, but really he's pressing them.
Oh my God.
Every time the guy comes home.
Wow. That is, I would say that's not the type of respect I would want.
Yeah. So here's the thing, right? So he's hiding in this bunker under the house and there are the three lights that are activated with the
buttons. And he's gone again. What's happening here?
And,
is this an attack?
This
Starlink
is done
shut down?
So
are
that
using
you can
Starlink
send a signal from
podcast?
The basement through
know.
The lights with
maybe
Morse
we should,
code.
Maybe we should use Starlink for this podcast. Maybe that's where we can find some listeners in
oh,
the
no.
stars. Anyways, what I was trying to say before was, holy crap, Sam Laboon, eh? Am I right? Hope he comes back with... Oh, hey!
Oh, man.
Are we back?
Yeah, we're back.
Okay. I don't know what's going on over there, but...
I don't know.
Technical issues.
Okay, where did my rambling cut off again?
So we were talking about the guy who was turning on the motion lights for the, and I figured that's not like, if he's doing that out of respect for me, I also find that sort of disrespectful, you know?
It's a little too respectful.
Yeah.
But yeah, so like, and then all the workers end up in this big fight and stuff. And, so it's kind of like a metaphor. So it's like the parasites, who's the parasite? Like from one perspective, you could argue that the poor people are the parasites,
right?
Attached to the rich family. Uh-huh. And it's basically like one parasite shows up to a new host only to discover that the host already has a parasite. And now there's a war between the two parasites to force the other one out so that they can suck the blood out of the host.
Right.
But do you think that, I don't think that's the message of the film, but what do you think? I think there's something else going on.
All I remember from that, I do remember the bunker. I remember the scene where they're all under the coffee table. That was a good one. But the message to me was more of like, I guess that it's kind of like these people feel like they need to latch on to a wealthy class in order to survive, and they're not the first people to do that. You know, it's like, it's not like they're just a psycho family doing it. Someone else already was doing it. So it's more like, all right, is this something that is out of necessity? I don't know much about, like, is there like a different situation? It takes place in Korea, I'm assuming, right? Is it like one-to-one reality Korea, or is there some sort of different element happening that's not happening in real life?
Oh, no, it's like fully in our world. Yeah.
Okay. See, I at this point, I don't think I'm, I don't know how broke I'd have to get to move my family into a different person's house against their new knowledge.
Well, they're not like, they work for them, basically.
They're right.
Not, yeah.
But with the intent, well, it kind of reminds me of Saltburn. You know, that guy was a real parasite.
Okay. Did you watch Saltburn? No.
Oh. If I can recall,
I think it's basically, it's a home invasion, right? It's like Funny Games.
Saltburn? No. Yeah.
No. Oh.
It's sort of similar to Parasite, but instead of him working, he like befriends these rich people, these rich kids at his university, and they invite them to their summer castle, basically called Saltburn. And he's there as their guest, like the main son's guest for the summer, and he lives there for the whole summer, and he starts realizing there's a bunch of cracks in the relationships and lies and dark secrets between the family members, and he starts finding a way, spoiler alert, where he can become the sole heir of the fortune via destroying the relationships of the family. So it's a really fucked up movie. Really fucked up, but it's like, yeah, everybody, it's one of those movies where everybody in the movie is a piece of shit. So it's like hard to even feel bad at the end, but it's just an extremely dysfunctional, wealthy family is taken advantage of by a very manipulative, crafty young man.
Wish they taught that in school.
Yeah. We need to teach more manipulation 101.
Yeah.
But then everybody would be privy to manipulation tactics and it wouldn't work. So it's like, you know.
Yeah. Well, we all need to be better on guard against manipulative tactics, I think. Parasite. Who's the parasite? Maybe you could argue that the wealthy family was the parasite on society and their parasitism is what is causing these ugly symptoms of these poor people fighting each other.
Do you remember if it talks about what that wealthy family did for their wealth?
The husband, it's not gone into it all. At one point you see him working in a software company, like looking at some headphones or something. So he seems to be some kind of executive.
Yeah.
But we don't really know.
See, I'm not about this whole mindset that if people are wealthy, they're like inherently doing something bad or they don't deserve it somehow. You know, it's one thing when you're, you know, when you have $600 billion, it's hard to be like, okay, does anyone really deserve, has anyone ever done anything to earn that really? Is there anything that Elon Musk has done that deserves $600 billion as compensation?
I don't know. Not that I'm aware of.
Yeah. I think he's just a Asperger autistic kind of guy who never
let's leave autism out of this.
What?
There's lots of very nice autistic people.
I'm sure there's a lot of autistic Asperger people that are very nice, but I think it plays into his disconnect from real relationships and what it feels like to actually be in. I don't think he's ever had a real true friendship in his life, that type of thing.
I don't know. I bet he did when he was younger. And then as he ruthlessly sought to acquire wealth and power at all costs, he lost all of his friends.
I don't know. I feel like just based on some of the shit I've seen him say and the way he talks and the way he, just the way he is, I just feel like, I don't know if this guy really has the capacity to really have the type of empathy required for true friendships. Same with Trump, but in a different flavor.
Yeah. Well, if all you care about is like, is acquiring power, then you're not going to make any friends.
I think Elon Musk is in the same sort of vein as Trump, as in that what he really wants is to be liked. And he doesn't know how to do that with his personality. So he tries to do it by, I don't know, doing stuff he thinks are cool. It's cool. And I get the same vibe from Zuckerberg too. He'll do whatever you think is cool for you to like him. And he has the money to do whatever you think is cool.
Okay, here's the counterpoint. Do you think they care about being liked, or do you think that they just know that it's important to be liked so that they don't lose all of their money?
That's the difference, I think, between Trump and Elon, is Elon actually wants to be liked because he wants that human-to-human connection. He really wants to know what it's like to be in like a genuine relationship with someone. Mm. Trump, I think, is more column B or A, whatever you said, is that he just knows it's a requirement to be liked to get what he wants.
Okay. If you want to be liked, right, you're Elon, you want to be liked.
Yes.
Why do you go on Twitter and call an astronaut a traitor? Or why do you try to fire millions? Why do you do the most asshole boss thing I've ever heard, which is tell me 5 things you did or you're fired? Or you might even get fired anyway if you tell me 5. One email, right? It's illegal. That's like illegal. That's the most asshole move you can imagine. If you want to be liked, why would you do something like that?
Because he doesn't want to be liked by those people. He wants to be liked by the people that want. Because he already knows the people that like him right now are Trump supporters. So he is willing to bully the other kids because the kids he wants to like him will like it, right? It's like, it's just like, that's the analogy. It's like, imagine being a kid in school, you're lonely, and then there's one group of kids that have started to like you and started to hang out with you, and you feel great. And now you're like, oh, these are my friends. And then those friends are like, you should bully that kid. I want my friends to keep liking me, so I'm going to do it.
I disagree with this. I strongly disagree with this. He was extremely popular before he did all of this. He was way more popular when he was Mr. Liberal, Mr. Global Warming, Mr. Tesla's going to take us to the future. He was much more liked when he was pro-LGBT. You can look at old tweets. He's not against it. He was way more popular back then. The Tesla stock price was way better back then. It's collapsing around him now. Everything he's done has caused him to be more and more disliked. So I don't see an intrinsic need to be liked here.
I think he just chose the wrong path. I think he
was on the right path. Why did he change? If he wanted to be liked, he was already liked by so many people.
Well, you could say that you could say that about a lot of people. Joe Rogan, for example, he was incredibly well liked before he fell into the right wing spiral vortex, right?
But he didn't fall into the vortex to become more liked. He felt like he had to do that to be authentic Joe Rogan.
You think so? Because just like with Elon's tweets, you go listen to some old Joe Rogan, not even that long ago. He is very pro. He's pro trans. He's pro gay. He's pro. He's pro a lot of the things that gun control.
I don't think he left those views because people didn't like him.
Yeah, I think he did it because he started trying to impress the wrong group of people.
Okay, sorry. I would say I think they'd had this shift. It happened around COVID, and it was because both of these people, Rogan and Musk, lost a lot of what they do for a living because of COVID, because the government took it away from them. And that's when they went nuts, in my opinion, and snapped. Joe Rogan was already a little bit there because he loved all the Trump shit talk.
There's actually, now that you bring this up, I watched an amazing YouTube video about this exact topic, specifically about Joe Rogan and why he and how this all happened to him and how he ended up being. It's called The Elephant Graveyard. This guy does a lot of videos.
I need to watch that.
He does a lot of videos on like the comedy boom. This one, he just talks about like the beginning of the video. He talks about how comedy has actually never been a good art form and it's always been dumb. And I had a hard time disagreeing with him. And it's never been good.
It's not supposed to be very metaphorical.
What do you mean? Like his opinion or that take?
Like comedy. It can reach its greatest heights without any need for a metaphor or an allegory. Just kick someone in the balls.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of what I was like, what comedy, like, yeah, lots of comedy is dumb. And it's like Dane Cook is despite what you think of his style of comedy, he was crushing hard. And bottom line, when it comes to comedy, the laughs are all that matters. And it can be, someone can find it hilarious. Other people can find it horrific. But he does a great breakdown in his theory of why Joe Rogan ended up where he is when he was kind of like a champion for, progressive values not long ago.
Yeah, no, I need to watch that. I do think that these guys like Elon, I agree with you that I do think he does want to be liked. Mm-hmm. And I think why else would you surround yourselves with sycophants if you didn't want to feel like people like you?
Right.
However, I think his primary motivation in life is not to have people like him and to be popular. I think his primary motivation is power, control, and how do you get that other than by wealth and buying companies that have geopolitical influence?
This is an interesting topic. I've always thought of what. So right now, Trump is making moves to make himself and his buddies more money and gain more power. And it's, where does the power bucket become full? You know what I mean? Like, at what point can you not just like, what kind of power are you looking for? Like,
to quote Donald Trump, it's enough is never enough.
Well, then enough should be, then any amount should be technically where you stop, right? If there's no end to it, then why?
There is no end goal. There's no end goal. They just love the power. They love being the killer. That's what they love.
Okay, but he's already at the point where he literally snap his fingers and anything he wants on the planet will basically appear.
Every drug develops a tolerance.
Ah.
You always need more to get your fix.
So
they're power junkies. They
let's do a little thought experiment here. Where if you could say Trump lives another 10 years and everything goes his way and he gets as much, every plan he puts in place, what do you think that type of power looks like?
He he misspoke recently during a White House interview and he referred to the United States as our company. And he's like, our country is, Yeah, I think you just see like, what does it look like? I mean, he's unfortunately not smart. He can't execute.
He's not smart.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, fortunately, he isn't smart enough to execute these things. This is like, okay, so Hitler, right?
Mm-hmm.
World War II, Hitler invades Russia.
Yeah.
This was not considered a good idea by the top generals.
Right.
So he fired them. But it had amazing initial success because it was so chaotic and unexpected. He broke a deal. He broke a non-aggression pact with the Soviet Union, surprise attacks all along the border, huge invasion, biggest invasion in military history. And it was so unexpected. It went against all the treaties, all the foreign policy up to that time, that it caught Soviet Union completely off guard.
Mm-hmm.
Stalin didn't believe it for like a day. He was paralyzed. He didn't know what was going on. Things looked very bad for the Soviet Union, and they probably would have lost. But Hitler, and things were going well because the generals were using their strategy of blitzkrieg and counter and pincers and encircling.
Yeah.
And then Hitler decides to take personal control. And personally intervenes and splits the army. Splits Army Group South in two. Instead of the entire Army Group South capturing the oil fields in the Caucasus, which would have fueled the German war machine,
you know,
big time. Hitler split the Army Group and sent half the group to capture Stalingrad.
Ah.
Why? Because the name Stalin was in it. Hitler wanted to make a point.
Oh my God. Are you serious? Yeah. That's really why?
Yes. And that battle cost them the entire war, Stalingrad.
One of the most famous battles ever.
Yep. They lost at Stalingrad. Meat grinder, 600,000 German troops captured.
Oh my God. I watched a video essay about Stalingrad and like how horrific it was, because that battle lasted weeks, right?
Yeah.
And like the way some of the German soldiers, after they lost, like the straggler Germans that had to survive in like the sewers of Stalingrad rather than get caught, it was fucking crazy. Like that is just an actual hell.
Yeah. And then throughout the rest of the war, the Germans wanted to retreat. Hitler refused to allow retreats, stand to the last man, which kind of worked sometimes, but just delayed the inevitable.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this is kind of like that. Like Trump is so crazy and so chaotic that you can't predict what he's going to do. And so there's initial success from how much chaos he creates.
But well, that's what they've been saying about these executive orders. So much for not becoming a political podcast.
What are you going to do? What are you going to do? But yeah, like I think that's what's going to happen here is eventually they're like a UFC fighter who his best chance of beating you is the first 2 minutes.
Right.
And if you make it through the first 2 minutes, it's basically over. They're going to get tired.
Right.
And I think that's what's basically going to happen here is he's so obsessed with the power and being in control and feeling that drug. That of it to the expense of actually having any real plans, that this is all just going to blow up in his face in the next year or two.
Well, it'll be an interesting summer. That's to be sure. I don't think we're going to get invaded. I think we're going to do this stupid trade war though, which is going to be, I mean, eventually this trade war makes, I don't think it makes any sense to a lot of Republicans either, so someone's just got to stand up on that side of the aisle and be like, what the fuck are we doing here? That being said, I gotta cut this a little short because it is time to put my baby to bed. You can email us at tpspod420@gmail.com, and you should. Anything else you want to add?
I highly recommend you go see Mickey 17.
I want to see that. Maybe I'll watch that while I'm in Victoria because I might have some free time by myself. Oh. What?
Oh. What?
Something that is a very rare. I had to even whisper that. I'm whispering that. Yeah, keep I'm that scared quiet. Of my wife hearing that. That I'm going to have an entire movie watched in one sitting, probably. Yeah. All right. That's it. Talk to you later. Bye.
Bye.
Philosopher's Stone.